cartoons from present and the past. Every week will be an animated bash. Woo! What a cartoon! What a cartoon! Maybe a short but mostly sharp. We'll talk, we'll analyze, exploring as we go. What a cartoon! What a cartoon! What a cartoon!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to What a Cartoon, where we're full of moral complexity. I'm your host, the scummy and villainous Bob Mackey, and this is an audio exploration of every cartoon ever. Who else is here with us today?
Henry Gilbert, and we've got company.
Oh, boy. And who else? Special guest?
Night Sister Initiate Kat Bailey.
That's right. And today's episode is all about Star Wars, The Clone Wars, episode Bounty.
Hey, boss, who's your girlfriend?
Shut up, Dengar.
Ooh, and this episode aired on March 2, or 2nd, as some people call it, humans, 2012. And yes, this is a backer episode by one of our higher tier backers. Henry, can you tell us about who this wonderful backer is?
This comes from Chris Cummins, so thanks for the support, Chris.
And, thanks, Chris. You let me talk about Star Wars.
Yes, if we were going to do our first Star Wars episode of What a Cartoon, only Kat Bailey is right for the guest. Like, and she is a Star Wars expert.
I'm a Star Wars neophyte. Is that the right word for it?
Okay. So you're a Padawan.
I don't want this. I don't like this at all.
But yeah, I was a big Star Wars fan, but I really only watched the movies a ton, read a few books and some comic books, but Kat, meanwhile, was way more into Star Wars than me.
Yeah, when you guys were watching The Simpsons in the mid-90s, I was busy reading the Star Wars Expanded Universe novels and playing all of the games and watching the movies pretty much on loop.
Kat was studying the blade, as they say.
The saber. You've been on other podcasts talking about your expertise in Star Wars Expanded Universe, which this is in an interesting situation as far as Expanded Universe stuff goes. But let's start from the beginning here. On May 25th, 1977...
Oh my God.
Oh my God, you really are starting from the beginning.
A film changed cinema and storytelling forever. And in one of the many lines that aren't meant to be followed up on, Princess Leia says to Obi-Wan Kenobi, "Years ago, you served my father in the Clone Wars." Which then meant for years onward, dorks who were like, "What were the Clone Wars? The Clone Wars? What are these Clone Wars?" And it would not be followed up on within the films by George Lucas for 25 years after that.
George Lucas was like, he would specifically tell writers, "Don't follow up on this, please. Yes. I just kind of want to leave this over here." Timothy Zahn actually kind of established a whole bunch of the Clone Wars with his original trilogy, the Heir to the Empire trilogy, where he established that clones were grown in these tubes and they went crazy or something, and he was suggesting that the Clone Wars were the result of these crazy clones and everything. But in fact, very different. Totally retconned out of existence.
Yes, and so cut to 25 years later, begun the Clone Wars have at the end of episode 2, Attack of the Clones, in the Star Wars prequel trilogy, which were all great and everyone loved them, right?
Those
wonderful prequels.
So I gotta say that there was a period in my life, a very brief period in my life, in about 2005, I want to say, when Revenge of the Sith came out, where I watched the prequels pretty much on loop because
Oh my God.
Yes, I did, because I rediscovered Star Wars around that time, and I started watching the prequels again, so I was like, well, maybe they're not so bad. And then I was like, but I really like the lore, and I got really into the lore, and I was like, these aren't so bad. These are pretty entertaining. And around that time, I discovered a little cartoon called The Clone Wars.
Yes, so Star Wars : Clone Wars was a 25-episode-long bridge cartoon series that would take you from episode 2 to episode 3, because several years pass in those. There's one of my favorite stories I heard about it was that they said they would find out from George Lucas the things that wouldn't be explained. One of their questions was like, well, so obviously in the film, you're going to show when Anakin becomes officially a Jedi Knight. And he's like, no, we're not. And like, oh, well, I guess we'll do that on our show then.
Well, they show him getting kind of knighted. And they use the lightsaber to cut off the little braid thing that signifies that you're a Padawan. It was actually kind of a cool scene.
Oh, no. Well, the whole series is done by Gin D. Tartakovsky, the creator of Dexter's Laboratory, and Samurai Jack. He did the show. It was amazing looking. Like, there were episodes that completely broke how powerful the Force is. There's one completely silent 5-minute episode where Mace Windu loses his lightsaber and defeats an army of robots, of droids, by just using the force and throwing a hail of nuts and bolts at characters and just ripping them apart, tearing apart everything, which even Yoda couldn't do that stuff. But in the show, they just were having fun animating.
Yeah, and Yoda was being absurdly strong in that show, too.
Oh, yes.
But the Clone Wars were important because up to that point, I think Anakin and Obi-Wan were just... their relationship wasn't really good. Mm-hmm. It was portrayed, especially in Attack of the Clones, as extremely antagonistic. Mm-hmm. And it was...
he's overly critical. Won't let me even train on my own.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it didn't really work, which was a huge problem because, of course... you had to feel the drama when they ultimately dueled, which everybody was waiting for. That was the reason we were suffering through the prequels, right?
To finally get to Mustafar and see it. And so it was a very successful Emmy Award winning series that then took you straight up to the 2005 release of Revenge of the Sith.
And it was so good because it had... well, first of all, it made General Grievous a badass.
Way more than he is in the movie.
In Revenge of the Sith, he was so disappointing. So I'd seen the Clone Wars cartoon, right? And I was like, all right. And General Grievous is in the movie. It's going to be great. And if I recall correctly, I want to say that they put General Grievous in Revenge of the Sith because of the Clone Wars cartoon, but I could be wrong, actually.
They found out he was a toy, and they're like, well, we're putting this guy in it then. And they overdid his powers. In the cartoon, he can fight like five Jedis at once, and he's fine.
Well, the whole point was that he took the lightsabers off the corpses of dead Jedi. And he was a total boss, and I was like, oh my god, this guy's awesome. And the reason that he wheezes is at the end, I think it was Mace Windu, does a force push and pushes him into his shuttle, and it crumples his chest plate. And that's why he's always going, ugh, in the movie.
It was a very last-minute addition there. But so, that was very popular. But George Lucas wasn't satisfied with that.
No.
And so, in the run-up to 2008... when seemingly we think we're all done with the prequels and we don't need anything else for them, George Lucas announces at an event that they're going to do a new Clone Wars series called Star Wars The Clone Wars, which makes this one different than Clone Wars.
Not just any Clone Wars.
and that it would be a fully CGI show made within Lucasfilm Animation. Hmm. It would be all internally done, and that it would air on Cartoon Network, which he now had a really good relationship with between Lucasfilm and Cartoon Network.
Because the previous one had actually aired on Cartoon Network, I think, yes.
And that Lucas... said that there would be at least 100 episodes, which, that's quite a problem. And if George Lucas says he's going to do that, he's going
to
do it.
The guy's able to fund them, pretty much, and he was going to find a home for them. I mean, the guy had more money than God. I'm sorry.
Yes, and now he has even more money than God had, more so. It debuted first with a feature film in 2008, which... honestly caused older fans like me to be like, this is dog shit and it's bad and they've ruined Star Wars even more than I thought they could.
Well, it got completely annihilated.
Isn't that film just four episodes, kind of stitched together?
Yes.
It wasn't wasn't designed as a film, so
it was
that's why it reviewed poorly.
Warner just was like, you know what? We got to premiere this better. Let's put this in theaters.
No, it was Lucas, actually.
Oh, Lucas wanted to.
Lucas, as he is wont to do, because Lucas would show up and he would just kind of show up at stuff that was making his things. He would take a look at it and go, no. Or he would go, yes. Or I remember there was a story about Star Wars The Force Unleashed where he made some comment about Darth Vader's powers. And he was like, no, you can't walk over there. It's too heavy. You just follow right through there. And they're just like, but we already modeled it. It's been modeled.
It's been done.
But when it came to this, he was watching. He was like, this looks amazing. Why don't we just turn this into a feature film? And they were like, okay,
yes.
I guess we'll do that now.
So that wasn't the best way to premiere the show,
no.
And it led people to have a lot of very negative reactions, especially to a farting baby hut,
and a gay hut,
and a rather effeminate hut,
kind of like Truman Capote, very flamboyant.
Wow,
it was quite silly, but the show was animated mainly in Singapore, and it had running the show were not just George Lucas, who was rather hands on with the show, but also executive producer Catherine Winder and supervising director Dave Filoni, who is a major creative force on the show heading it up. It created a whole new canon that threw away whatever happened in Gendy's Clone Wars. That didn't count anymore. And it had all your favorites: Anakin, Obi-Wan, Palpatine, Mace Windu, Yoda, 3PO, R2, even Jar Jar Binks, as well as some original characters, most importantly, Anakin's own Padawan, Ahsoka Tano, who is a real fan favorite, a Twi'lek Padawan.
She's not Twi'lek,
Okay. I failed already.
She's the same race as Shakti, and you'll forgive me, I don't remember the name.
Kat's right about this.
But actually, she started off as a non-fan favorite. She was considered, I mean, she had a lot of fighting with Anakin Skywalker. She was originally conceived because George Lucas had a couple daughters. But also because they were like, well, we need to grow the character of Anakin, and we need to kind of ground him a little bit and have like some responsibility and show and demonstrate his own growth as a character. So they gave him a Padawan, and initially she was like a 14-year-old girl.
She's a spunky princess in JRPG parlance.
And she's being written by a guy who doesn't know how to write a 14-year-old girl.
And they kind of
admitted that, actually. Mm-hmm. And so for quite a few fans were like, I hope she dies.
But she grew to be a fan favorite.
She did grow to be a fan favorite because she kind of bridged Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, the one that ultimately followed up. Mm. And from that point on, people saw her as an important piece of canon and were like, well, what happens to her? Because people were hoping she would die in the sense of like, well, she will die and this will push Anakin closer to the thing. And she wasn't seen in Revenge of the Sith, so she has to die. When she's going to die, and she doesn't die. Mm. Spoiler alert, she makes it all the way to Star Wars Rebels, and then Star Wars Rebels are going like, well, she's going to die. Mm. She has to fight Darth Vader now. And it was an interesting subplot,
It's a really good, I don't want to spoil it for folks who watch that Rebels story, but
Rebels was good, by the way.
And also, Clone Wars went to the trouble of bringing back characters who you didn't even think they'd have on the show, like you got to see Qui-Gon's Force Ghost voiced by Liam Neeson.
Oh, cool. He was doing Fallout 3 at the time, probably.
He'd set aside, like, you want 20 minutes?
If I can do a really quick sidebar, Qui-Gon Jinn was actually a really interesting character who was not portrayed well at all in Phantom Menace, because the whole point of Qui-Gon Jinn was that he was a rebel. Mm-hmm. He was like definitely going against the Jedi Council. He
broke the rules all the time.
He was supposed to show how ossified the Jedi and corrupt the Jedi Council actually was. And you don't get any of that. You have to read so much of the supplementary material to really understand. It's like, oh, Qui-Gon Jinn's kind of an interesting character. And I feel like so many people end up having fond feelings about the prequels, forgive me, because I don't think the prequels are actually good movies at all.
What?
And there are people who are like mega prequel defenders.
Oh,
they've
boy.
Read so much of the supplementary material that they can't break the prequels away from that. And they're like, but all of the lore. There's so much lore.
Well, maybe George Lucas should have put it in the movies then.
Yeah. I mean, well, show, don't tell, right? Mm. And they don't do a great job of showing it.
And also, they brought back Darth fucking Maul.
With a robot body. Legs.
Yes. Along with his brother, Savage. Savage, Savage.
That makes it smarter.
Yes. And so Star Wars The Clone Wars, over a period of years, would end up airing 121 episodes.
Oh, my gosh.
Though the final season would not be aired on Cartoon Network, because after Disney bought Star Wars, Cartoon Network's like, we're not airing Disney programming on our channel. And they just dumped it.
Wow.
And the rest of the series, it was too far along. So the next season got finished, and then it premiered, at least in America, on Netflix.
Okay.
And more to the point, Disney was ready to move away from the prequels because George Lucas was like, oh, no, the prequels. This was my real vision for Star Wars. I got all of the CG. I'm building out this entire thing. And people are pretty dismissive of prequels, but they actually raise an entirely new generation of kids. generation of kids who became mega freaking Star Wars fans. Mm. And that is why Star Wars is as big as it is, because these kids, they freaking love the prequels, and they really, really, really love Star Wars The Clone Wars. This is where we demonstrate our age. Yes,
well,
this was after our time, but...
Speaking of this, by the way, hey, I'm Bob Mackey. I'm still here. I want to talk about... So Kat made me think of this, actually, in that I want to talk about my Star Wars experience and why I am trying to stay on board with this, but it's I don't have the depths of knowledge you guys have.
Sorry.
And it's because I have no excuse, but we were all born relatively around the same time. I think Kat is maybe just 1 year younger than Henry and I, in that... believe it or not, if you're younger than us, there was maybe a 15-year period in which Star Wars was not shoved in your face every second. It was just this thing that was sort of this cool movie you heard about, and it was easy to miss. And I missed it. I still have not seen Return of the Jedi.
What? What?
Yes. Wow. Yes. It just didn't enter my world. Like, a lot of nerdy things did, but Star Wars didn't. So by the time my brain had developed, Star Wars was just this thing I was encountering sort of as an adult, and I don't have that like nostalgia or affection for it that a lot of people do, and I feel like I missed something. And capitalism failed me. It should have been advertising Star Wars to me from birth, like all these new children. But there was a period in which George Lucas was like, no, fuck Star Wars, I'm doing other shit. But he never did other shit.
You didn't have the merch in your face all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
There was the period until about 1997 or a little before that when it started with the Power of the Force toy line, and then the re-releases straight into the prequels. Like, that's when the giant machine started back up again.
Yeah.
Well, if you'll forgive me, Star Wars fans, George Lucas was always very straightforward about it. It's like, yes, I'm making like this kind of funny space pulp. I'm doing Flash Gordon again, complete with the really over the top text crawls and all that, and I'm appealing to kids, and we're having a good, fun space adventure. And at some point, people are like, "This is really deep, and we're really going into the metaphysics of the Jedi religion." And he's like, "Okay, whatever." So I'm making a movie, and I'm making the prequels. This is gonna be a lot of fun. I'm gonna go no whole new generation of kids in here, and people are like, "What? This isn't the greatest thing ever. I don't understand.
This is for children?"
And let's be fair, the prequels aren't as good as the original trilogy. I know I'm stating the obvious, but at the same time, like, George Lucas was very clear in his objective. He was not doing a dark and edgy and hardcore Star Wars. He was basically making this for the next generation. And you know what? He succeeded. The kids love it.
Well, kids are stupid, as I always say.
I mean, you look around the internet, how many freaking prequel memes are there these days? Oh, yeah. Anakin, I have the high ground. It's funny, but people have an affection for it.
But I think, I've said this before in Talking Simpsons, what's most emblematic of that Star Wars drought is the joke about Skinner and Lisa's rival, in which he is way into Star Wars action figures, because the joke in 1994 or 1993 was, the only people who care about Star Wars are old virgins. Yeah. It is not a cool thing that everyone knows about. It's a thing that these old dorks know about and care about.
Oh, I was mega embarrassed to even. I was reading Star Wars books, and I was like, just fucking man. I was like,
it's the Bible, I swear.
I'm not reading any of this stuff.
No, I also felt a certain dorkiness to it too. But by the time 2008 rolled around, I was probably at the low point of my Star Wars fandom. I was not ready to watch a Clone Wars show because it was just like, the prequels suck.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of these. And it'll never be good because George Lucas wouldn't make a good thing anymore. So boo on him.
And then about a year later, the Plinkett reviews came around and just utterly annihilated the prequels and
burned them to the ground.
Yeah. And, for as much as they lean on a lot of like gags and gross out humor, those are sort of the definitive criticism about those movies. Like, I don't think anyone can do better at pointing out the flaws of those movies. And they went on to build an empire off of those reviews. Like, Red Letter Media is awesome.
It invented online movie criticism. On YouTube, at least, in a way. There's a million people making that same content.
Watching those three movies, or watching those three videos, and watching them systematically tear apart the prequels just made me sit back in my chair for a long time and go, wow,
the worst.
I sure did
ever.
Spend a lot of time watching this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, those are still fun to revisit. I watch them maybe like every year just because I've never even seen episodes 2 and 3 outside of Riff Tracks, and it's just like, I love watching him tear them down. It's great.
I wish that his Star Wars Force Awakens video was better, because, oh my god, that was real bad.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of The Simpsons, I just saw a recent awesome steamed hams meme about episode The Force Awakens. It was J.J. Abrams, what if I were to disguise my episode 4 as my own movie? Oh, delightful. Playfully devilish J.J. Abrams.
So the Clone Wars show as itself it really did open them up for a lot more opportunities. They were able to tell a lot of stories they couldn't really tell in a film setting. Long form stories that let characters grow and change, and also allowed for a ton of fan service. But honestly, better fan service than, say, what if Yoda were to use lightsaber?
And Jordan Peterson directed Star Wars?
I'll have you know that when Yoda pulled out his lightsaber for the first time, the entire theater cheered. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my god, and this is amazing.
I thought it was the greatest thing too, until I thought about it. Like, once the high... All three prequels, I liked them in the theater, and once the high was over, I was like, wait a minute.
But of course, in Revenge of the Sith, you had Yoda and the Emperor doing backflips with lightsabers, and you were like...
We were fully in the Hoodaman, Yodaman era, and frankly, I cashed in my chips there. But I will say, despite how I am not that connected to Star Wars, I really liked this episode. I really liked what I saw of this series. I was very impressed by it.
It was a great show.
No, it's Clone Wars was a great show with a lot of like really good voice acting, writing, character development, and it works on multiple levels too. And it knew what its scale was. And the last thing I'll say about the history of this show was when the Clone Wars ended. It got the very special thing of staying canonical. All other things that weren't movies were like, you're not canonical anymore. You're now legends, except for the Clone Wars. It's partially because Clone Wars wasn't over yet when they made that pronouncement, and also because they knew Rebels would be a sequel to Clone Wars.
So yes, I'm dumb as hell. I'm dumb as hell. When does this take place in the Star Wars timeline?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It takes place between episodes 2 and 3.
Yes. Okay.
So after,
am I supposed to know this?
I'm sorry, Danica.
It's okay.
That's totally fair. No, it takes place right after episode 2, where Yoda goes, begun these Clone Wars have. And it features the battle between the Separatists and the Republic. Mm-hmm. And the Republic are led by the Jedi, and the Separatists are led by the droids. And what we don't know is that the Emperor is pulling the strings from behind the scenes.
All of them.
Is he the Phantom Menace?
He is the George W. Bush of the entire thing. Because it was meant to be like...
I mean the Dick Cheney, right?
George Lucas pretended he wasn't making a Bush allegory. Yes. But I mean, come on. Yeah. Come on. And yeah, so you get... But as a viewer of the Clone Wars, you know where all the major characters are going to go. But where you don't know... What you don't know are the new characters they created for it, and you can get a lot more interested in them. And that especially goes for the lead of this episode, which is Ventress. Yes. Asajj Ventress, who actually was taken from the first Clone Wars, from the Tartakovsky Clone Wars. She was introduced in that as the Padawan for Dooku, who is Count Dooku.
Christopher Lee went in and played Count Dooku. Yeah.
I just, whenever I hear that name, I also hear Beavis and Butthead laughing at it.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, Darth Tyrannus is a better name, I'd say.
Well, Asajj Ventress, very interesting character in a lot of respects, just because I would say that she, and along with Ahsoka, is probably the most major character of the Clone Wars. She is definitely kind of a villain protagonist. She has like multiple arcs. If you go on her Wikipedia article,
it's long.
It's really freaking long.
It ends in a book because they couldn't get to tell her final story in Clone Wars. It got canceled first.
But in the original, she was conceived as the original Dooku. She was originally the kind of the apprentice, as it were. She was one of the many designs. And so when they were going and making the Clone Wars cartoon, they dug out that design and ultimately created her as a character. And in the Clone Wars cartoon, she has a really badass duel with Anakin Skywalker at the Yavin, the temples at Yavin 4 from the original Star Wars movie. It was awesome, and she was really so cool that they ultimately decided to keep her for the new Star Wars, the Clone Wars cartoon show.
My stars!
We need you, Anakin.
That was impressive.
Cartoon Network is proud to present Star Wars, The Clone Wars, New Adventures, only on Cartoon Network. Their galaxy isn't far, far away anymore. The Force will be with you.
That's my master.
And real quick before we get into just the full episode, this was why Chris picked this episode. Here's his reasons for it. This episode is the end of the first Asajj Ventress arc in the series. It is the first episode of Clone Wars that I watched. It's about Ventress finding her way after being kicked out of Dooku's inner circle and losing everything. Boba Fett, Bosk, and Dengar all guest star in this episode. I love it.
Kind of a heist episode, I suppose you could call it, because it's a bunch of bounty hunters fighting on a train. That's the episode, but it's a really great action episode. I kind of want to compare it to something like maybe The Raid or yeah. even something like Die Hard where you're in a very enclosed space.
It's a very Western. It's a Western style one, too. Just like especially the just kind of cowboy theming of arriving in the town. And then they're like, well, why don't you join our posse?
I have to say, Chris picked a great episode for me because when this episode started, I was on board. I mean, this is my job and I was interested in this and curious about it. So I was like, I'm on board with this. I want to see what it's about. The prologue is like a 30-second thing. First this happened, then this happened. What happened to this guy? And then this person did this. I'm like, oh my God, what are these names, these places? And then it's a self-contained like episode that's like I understood everything. It's a great choice. So thank you, Chris.
And it was also, by the way, I just want to say that when they're doing the little voiceover recapping everything, yeah. I love the 1930s adventure voice. Yeah. It's very fitting for Star Wars.
It's the old radio serial voice that fits with the tone of the Flash Gordon callbacks. And this episode was written by Katie Lucas. Yes, the daughter of George Lucas.
How'd she get that job?
I mean, it's a well-written episode. Like, but yes,
I agree. It's very well done.
And she also played a character in each of the prequel movies too. And
George Lucas really loved his daughters yes. so much that during one of his big parties, I think one of them was really into Maroon 5, so he just went, Maroon 5, get over here.
Wow.
Yeah.
He also supported one in an MMA career as well.
Wow.
It's directed by Kyle Dunleavy, who is an ILM vet who didn't really direct too much animation, but he worked on the effects and animation for Jurassic World, Paddington 2, and both of the Fantastic Beast films.
So, wow, I mean, those are all good movies for special mm-hmm. effects, for sure.
I agree, yeah. And I gotta say, I'm proud of myself because when Boba Fett started talking, I'm like, that guy is swallowing some sort of accent. It's driving me crazy. And I was like, is it Australian? No, it's gotta be New Zealand. And I was right, that guy is a New Zealand actor. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, just let him talk in that accent. It's so yeah. distracting. It's the only thing I didn't like.
I gotta say that, mm-hmm. it's, so in Attack of the Clones, you meet Boba for the first time, right. along with his father, Jango. Mm-hmm. And he had kind of this New Zealand type accent, and it drove me crazy at the time because it was so different from how he sounded in Empire Strikes Back. And then they went and changed Empire Strikes Back to have him
so
sound
much.
That way. And I was
Thank
like,
God.
What have you done?
I hated that so much. He should be a guy saying like, he's worth nothing to me dead. Like,
yes.
That's how you should sound. So it's great to do an episode starring Ventress because I loved her on the series. And also, if this is the one episode of Clone Wars you watch, but you're a Star Wars fan, that it just starts on Tatooine. You're like, well, all right.
Even Bob Mackie knows what that is.
Freaking Mos Eisley and mm-hmm. freaking Tatooine, man. Tatooine, with its incredibly outsized importance in the Star Wars universe, everything happens on freaking Tatooine.
Yeah, despite Luke describing it as the place farthest from the most interesting place in the universe, it's actually quite interesting. Like, Jakku is the real toilet of the universe. Even Tatooine's Luke is like, oh, Jakku, that place sucks. Like, that really is.
Where do the Gungans live? That sucks too.
Naboo.
Yeah, they all sound the same to me.
Naboo actually looks kind of nice to hang out with. I mean, if you go to Tatooine, you're dealing with sand people who want to eat you or something.
Two sons.
You're just in Tunisia, really.
Giant frog things that are eating lizards.
Jawas are going to steal your shit. Like, yeah. And racist bar owners who don't allow droids in there.
What the hell's wrong with them?
The best owner was Bee Arthur by far. She sung a torch song. She respected all of her guests.
So we arrive at the Mos Eisley Cantina, which is just perfect. I love it. And Ventress, if you've never seen her before, if this was your introduction to her, this is quite an amazing one.
Row straight up. Another.
She's a hard drinking sin.
Hey there. What's a pretty bald babe like you doing in a desert like this?
Get lost.
Hey, I'm talking to you, lady.
I'm not much of a talker.
That's great. So upon watching this, I didn't know what I was in for, but in the first minute, it's just like drinking, threats of sexual violence, and murder. I'm like, this is TV parental guidance. I'm on board.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I wish I had a lightsaber to do that to guys in a bar.
Yeah.
Just be like, I don't want to talk to you.
That's pretty much.
Yeah, and that, as George Lucas famously said, it's like poetry and rhymes. but this is a classic redoing of a lightsaber killing a jerk in, or maiming a jerk at least, in the Mos Eisley Cantina. And then also the music stopping and then restarting once everybody's like, okay. Whenever you see, if you see, even then, if you saw a lightsaber in a bar, you're like, oh shit, not everybody has that. Oh man.
Well, during the Clone Wars, I mean, the Jedi were still around, but I would suppose that a lightsaber would still be a relatively rare thing at that time.
I would think if on Tatooine you saw a lightsaber in person, you would never stop telling that story. Yeah. Like, wow.
I have to say that people are always like, whoa, Han Solo forgot about the Jedi. The galaxy is so big at this time. And you have to, and there aren't that many Jedi actually running around. I have to imagine that they were almost kind of a rumor, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, no, the Republic totally has these Jedi who have magic powers. And people are like, come on.
That's mumbo jumbo.
Yeah. So to actually see a lightsaber killing somebody, we go, whoa, seriously? That's insane.
I mean, people are kind of mixed about The Last Jedi, that movie, but I feel like it also showed that these conflicts are like sort of not taking up the entire universe. It's sort of like they're kind of relatively small in the grand scheme of things.
Well, the whole point of the original Star Wars was that all of this was taking place on kind of the outer rim, far away from the galactic core and that kind of thing.
And according to Wikipedia,
thank you.
This is the first ever reference to Prow, the a P-R-O-W, that is the drink that she's, her blue space drink in classic Star Wars style. So yeah, she kills a guy with a lightsaber and just has, she has a funny thing. And so I love also the animation of the Twi'lek dancer who's like, I'm getting back into the groove. Yeah. Okay, hey, it's fun time again.
So before we move on, can I just focus in on Asajj Ventress really quickly?
Yeah.
Sure.
So one of the things that's interesting about her is, from a canon standpoint, it's kind of nebulous because, so she is a Night Sister of Dathomir. Mm-hmm. And Dathomir was established in one of the books from the 90s, The Courtship of Princess Leia. All right.
Whoa.
Which, and the Night Sisters were force using witches, okay? And stuff happens with them, and ultimately they're more or less wiped out in this book, but it continued to be a thread throughout the expanded universe books, right? And I guess they liked the concept of force using witches so much that they brought it back for the Clone Wars, but then they removed the novels from the canon.
The novels don't count anymore.
Novels don't count anymore, but they still have Dathomir and they still have the Night Sisters.
So
just got all killed off by Dooku in a previous episode.
To quote one of my favorite movies, Suspiria, what does it mean to be a witch? In the Star Wars universe.
They have magic and they can raise
armies. So magic is real?
The dead. I mean, I guess their knowledge of the Force and the way that they have some kind of ability, forgive me, I'm not hugely up on the Night Sister abilities.
I need all of it, Kat.
they do stuff with the Force that Jedis can't do, including like zombie style.
I mean,
things.
I guess the Force is magic, so I don't know why I'm questioning this. Like,
no,
wait
no,
a minute,
the Force,
magic?
The Force is with midichlorians.
It's biological.
It's scientific.
Yeah.
By the way, I liked midichlorians when it was first explained to
they
me
were
because
like,
I was a nerd in 1999 who needed everything explained to her.
They were like power levels.
Yes, exactly.
Also, as a Star Wars fan, if there's one thing that's cool and could still never be made uncool by George Lucas in the prequels are the bounty hunters. The one, like the 20 seconds of film time that the bounty hunters got in Empire Strikes Back started its own industry of bounty hunter toys, books,
games.
Comics, games, all this stuff.
Because they were badasses, let's be honest.
They all look so bad. They had so many stories to them. You just look at a character like Bosk and you're like, what's his deal?
I mean, you had these poor Imperial officers in the Star Destroyer pit, and they look up and they see Boss kind of looking down at them going, and they're like, oh my God. It was the Empire Strikes Back equivalent of the Mos Eisley bar, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're like looking at these crates. You got a droid. You got a guy who kind of looks like he's from Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes.
You have this cool dude in armor and stuff who's able to track down even Han Solo. Mm-hmm. And you have a lizard man and you're going, what's going on with here? And they're bosses in Super Empire Strikes Back. They appear in the games. They're all just explored ad nauseum in the books. Boba Fett has at least 20 different freaking origin stories.
Does that werewolf guy get a book from the cantina?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina. They
teach
all
me
have
to be
stories.
A smartass.
It was more of a collection of short stories. He didn't get his own singular prose novel.
I want to read about when he bought the werewolf mask.
But so they're really using all the ringers in this one. You've got Bosk. Later, you'll get Dengar and Boba Fett. The only real major one missing is IG-88.
Which I love IG-88 because he was trying to start a droid revolution in the galaxy and even went so far as to upload his consciousness into the Death Star.
It's really cool. I love that bit.
As a gamer, I recognize IG-88 from KOTOR. Is that correct?
No, he was in Shadow of the Empire.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yes, yeah. He was a boss in Star Wars Shadow of the Empire.
Okay, who was the robot guy in...
That was HK-47.
Okay, yes. Just a bunch of letters and numbers, guys.
He's pretty cool, too.
HK was pretty rad. In fact, I would say all of the droids in the Star Wars games were ultimately pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. So, let's meet Boss.
What do you want?
I'm Bosk, and this is Lazarazzi. We're bounty hunters, and...
We have a problem. What kind of problem?
You just killed one of our team.
Sorry about that.
So, where did you get the lightsabers?
Stole them.
Bounty hunter, then?
No.
Ever considered it? You certainly have the right disposition.
Never thought about it. Does it pay well?
Very well.
We have a job to do, and you owe us a man.
So what are they holding over her head in this episode? Because I feel like the death of that guy is not, no one cares about the guy that she killed. Is that what they're holding over her head, or what?
The fact that he was part of their group, and they're basically going, you killed our guy, and we probably should kill you, but we want to help you in the group. And she's just kind of going along with it, because she's like, I could kill you. But I'm bored.
Yeah.
Also, I just saw all of my kin murdered, and I'm kind of in a bad mood. So
Ventress is in a bad place.
Yeah.
As will be established a little later, the demand is there has to be six people on the job.
Right.
And they got to find another replacement right there.
Well,
Ventress could kill her way out of it. Like when they say, oh, we'll get the authorities.
That's what I was going to question you about.
She's like, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
Like, but I think she just didn't want to kill. She's like, well, I could kill everybody. But also, she just escaped Count Dooku, who thinks she's dead. If she pops back up on the authorities' radar, then Dooku is right on her.
Okay,
buddy.
Yeah, I didn't have that context. So cool.
And also, she's just—I like her interest. Like, no, that doesn't have to be necessary. I'm interested.
Yeah, like overall, I thought the plotting was like super tight on this, but I was just curious about that aspect of it.
But more to the point, we hear Bosk talk
because
in Empire Strikes Back, he's just kind of like,
yeah. That's a great, actually, if you've been waiting to hear Bosk's voice your entire life and you just hear him go before saying something like, oh, is that all the noise he made? Oh, now he's talking.
Okay. But I believe this is not his first appearance in Clone Wars. He has appeared in the second season, I think, with Boba Fett.
This is not the first appearance of these bounty hunters. So it's more like, awesome, the bounty hunters are back.
Yes.
So cool. And it's almost like a star is born for a bounty hunter. Like, you've got some good moves. You ever think about becoming a dancer? And we then get the introduction of Dengar, who I didn't know until reading it is voiced by Simon Pegg.
Yes.
Really?
Dengar, okay. Yeah. I mean, Simon Pegg, obviously a mega Star Wars dork.
Noted prequel detractor, Simon Pegg.
But if you let him play an original trilogy character like Dengar, he's on it like white on rice.
Mr. Star Trek fan, too. Huge Star Trek fan.
He getting to be Scotty was quite a blessing for
him. And then he ultimately wrote the third Abrams Trek movie.
Well, because who was going to? Not J.J. Abrams.
And people kind of... I feel like we're down on that movie, but I actually really liked it. So
it was better than Into Darkness. That's for damn sure.
Into Darkness is the worst Star Trek movie by far.
Of all of them, ever?
It's the worst one. It's much worse than Nemesis or Star Trek V.
Because it was sort of remaking the best Star Trek movie, right? In a way,
I could go on about that movie forever. But let's talk about Star Wars.
Move on.
So then we not only get to meet Dengar, but a certain little tyke.
Boss, this is your boss.
You got a problem with that? My name's Boba, and this is Highsinger. I see you've already met Bosk and Lance. What's your name?
I don't have a name.
So it's gonna be like that, huh?
Look, kid, I don't take orders very well, especially from someone of your stature and obvious lack of experience.
Yeah, I like the dynamic between those two, how it plays out throughout the entire thing.
So you mentioned that New Zealand accent. That's why I really like, because the actor who played Django was a New Zealand, Temuera Morrison. Him giving that accent to Django meant that his clone son, Boba, would have that same stupid accent.
But he is stifling it to make it more American. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like full New Zealand. It's like it's creeping out around whatever he's putting on.
He's got to act tough. He's also, you know, he got scarred by watching his dad get decapitated by a Jedi.
By Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, he never got that revenge. That would have made more sense. I wish Boba Fett had killed Mace Windu.
Django fighting Obi-Wan in Attack of the Clones is probably the only worthwhile scene in that entire movie.
It's a great little fight scene. Yeah. With the rain, it's like, oh, this doesn't feel like a green screen because they're getting rained on.
And it was the first time that, because obviously Boba Fett was such a loser in the original trilogy. And it was pretty funny because obviously he got hit. They accidentally set off his jetpack and sent him flying into the Sarlacc in Return of the Jedi. And there are tons of, in the books, he eventually crawls out of the Sarlacc, or he makes it out. He survives.
In one of the comic books, it was that Dengar came back and pulled him out of it.
But we never really got to see him fight too much. We saw him briefly shoot at the crew in Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. But in Attack of the Clones, you see Django. He's got the dual blasters, which you see Boba Fett doing the same thing in this episode. And he's actually holding his own against Obi-Wan, and it's pretty rad. So he has this moment.
Yeah, though this Boba Fett doesn't yet have his Mandalorian armor. Not that he'd even fit in it. He's a kid. But a boy. He's at best like 2 years older than he was in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. He's trying to be tough. You can tell that he's really uncertain, kind of scared, but he's trying to really be like, no, I'm super tough bounty hunter. And I think it works. And I just want to observe really quickly. So as we all know, the dialogue in the prequels was so bad.
Yes.
It was so stilted. Mm-hmm. There was no naturalistic back and forth in dialogues. And I like
how I hate sand. It's so coarse it gets everywhere.
Yes, exactly. And so I like how snappy the dialogue is in Clone Wars.
Yeah.
A lot of these scenes could actually be really annoying, but it comes off fairly well. Like the relationship between Asajj Ventress and Boba Fett. You're immediately... You're feeling the power dynamics between them. You get the sense that Asajj is dangerous, and you get the sense that Boba Fett is trying. It's a little bit of a try hard.
And they know when to pull back on dialogue. There's a lot of this that's conveyed through action where they could easily stop and save animation money and talk about things. But like, I would say half of this episode is that train action set piece.
Yeah, I agree. They can only have so many sets in a CG show, too. So they stick around a place for a while, but that really lets you get the feel of it. And I also really like like you said, the relationship between Boba and Ventress, that he's just constantly like, I'm a grown-up. All these people respect me. She's like, I got bossed around by Count Dooku. You're nothing to me. Like, she is not afraid of a little bounty hunter at all. She doesn't. None of these characters know how cool Boba Fett is like we do. It's fun to see that. So then the arrival at the space station is great. It's very similar in like framing and lighting to the arrival of on the force moon of Endor from Return of the Jedi, I would say. Here we go again. And I also really love the animation on Rigoso's mouth.
I love that.
It's really just so many little touches in the show that makes you see that they were working way harder on this than most television CG was doing at the time.
Yes, it was kind of the four parts moving up and down, almost like a starfish or something.
He had a cootie catcher mouth.
That's,
this episode's kind of cast like a Shadowrun episode or a Shadowrun campaign or a D&D campaign where you have the character in the cantina who meets the bounty hunters, who then subsequently gets the mission, and then there's a fight sequence.
It reminded me of like a video game, like totally video game inspired almost.
Yeah,
the way
yeah.
everything moves. She gets a quest, she goes on the quest, she's got to make telltale style moral decisions.
And there's also a great line when Boba is kind of like one of the dorks of Star Wars, just like, why don't they just fly a spaceship there?
I love that. They have to. They need to think of a reason, and the episode is built around that. Like, why can't they just fly there? It's like, no, they have to go down in a tube and then travel on a train to get to their
space
destination.
Space elevator.
Yeah,
it's such a great way of grounding a universe. It's like, well, yeah, I could just fly my X-Wing fighter or whatever straight. I can fly the Slave One right there and just
Henry,
dump it.
The yeah. X-Wings weren't until the original trilogy.
That's why I changed it to Slave One. I know. Okay.
I don't know, but it's sort of like that Lord of the Rings, like why can't the Eagles just fly the ring over, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And that's why Boba
don't
Fett also...
Don't get me started on that.
Hey, I've seen Clerks too.
And there's great animation too on just Quarzite, that's the name of the planet, just the surface, the stormy surface of it. It reminds me a little of Geonosis.
You mean Kamino?
Oh, Kamino, damn it.
It's Kamino.
Well, what's Geonosis then?
Geonosis is the industrial planet where there is the initial battle between the Jedi and the clones
They go from Kamino to Geonosis.
It has the absolutely atrocious factory action scene that they shot in an afternoon because they're like, what do we need to do? Well, what if we just had Amidala just running around through this horrible kind of video game? It was almost like Nick Arcade.
I was just
going to
say that, like she was on the bonus round of Nick Arcade.
Yeah. They showed how it looked in the making of documentary, and it's, you know, it's green screen. She's jumping over a bunch of foam stuff. It really is like Nick Arcade.
It is Nick Arcade, yeah.
And 3PO may as well have just been Jar Jar Binks in that scene. It's like, well, Jar Jar Binks won't be doing funny stuff. But you just gave the scenes to 3PO. It doesn't matter.
And then all of a sudden, R2-D2 had rocket launchers. And I don't mean to slag on the prequels because
it's been done to death.
But it's inevitable, right?
Yes. Well, one thing the prequels didn't have is the kind of atmosphere and just focus of this episode, which you're allowed on a show. And you're just like, this is just a fun little one-off that is more of a character set piece than anything else. And when they get on the train, I will say, as an adult watching this show for children, the second I saw that box, I knew exactly what was in there and what was going to happen.
Oh, I didn't. I must have been naive.
Me neither.
I've seen this story a million times in fantasy and westerns and all this, like, well, the cargo is a girl, and she's kidnapped. That's actually the plot of Transporter, the first Transporter film of Jason Statham, where he realizes halfway through a delivery, like, oh, delivery's a girl, I'm doing human trafficking, I probably shouldn't do that.
I've never seen the Transporter, so I was genuinely surprised by this.
Well, Bossk is definitely confused.
So that's it. That is what we're protecting.
Who cares? As long as we get paid.
My lord Otua Blank will meet us on the other side. Good luck.
I kept in the music there because I just love the music in this. John Williams did not do the score, but it's a great compliment.
It's very good, I have to say. It's a very good, adds a very good texture
it
to all this.
It feels like Star Wars, for sure.
Yeah.
And when they arrive on the train, there's just such a great... They have to establish where each car is so you know where they are going to be during the fight. And that camera move just through the train is just gorgeous.
I appreciated that. And in terms of storytelling via visuals, it's very easy to tell where everyone is and what's happening all throughout this like extended fight scene.
Yeah, the best thing that an action movie can do is define the space early on so that you know exactly where everybody is, and that tracking shot is a great way to do it.
Yeah, and they don't waste a second either. Like the second, like, okay, here they are on the train, and the Marauders are here right now. We're gonna get fucking started
immediately. Yeah,
here come the ninjas.
They are ninjas, but I honestly expected just a lot of talking in this, which is why this surprised me.
Yeah, though somebody's doing some smooth talking on the caboose here.
Okay, Boba. Cargo is secure.
Max, you and Heising stay there. I'll be in the engine room with Boss. I sent the new girl and Denga to the back.
All right, darling. Looks like we're secure in the back platform together.
Wonderful.
So, what do you think's in that box?
Whatever it is, it better be worth all this effort.
She's so acerbic.
Yes.
I like that Dengar is kind of a smooth talker in this one, especially because he looks kind of like a melty old guy in Empire Strikes at the Back. So it clearly hasn't had a great time since the Clone Wars. But not only that, in the expanded universe, I think that he eventually gets out of the bounty hunter business, and I think Boba Fett is the best man at his wedding or something to that effect.
Really?
It's pretty amazing.
Even in the Mandalorian armor, he still, he doesn't take that stuff off.
No, absolutely not. But I like Dengar in this episode, and I think Simon Pegg does a great job with him.
Yeah, he does. I think he does a really good job as him as well, and being kind of slimy and hitting on Ventress, which is just like, she already killed a guy for hitting on her in this same group. Like, Dengar is lucky to walk away with his life.
I gotta say, Ventress looks a lot better with hair. It's not like she's a bald alien. She just shaves her head.
Later she will grow hair. Mm-hmm. And it's Dengar who gets the classic line of, "We got company." Mm-hmm. Like, he's another of the many Star Wars stock lines that people say. And I also love the kid Boba Fett's cute little mask. It's just like, oh, aren't you adorable?
Baby Fett.
Yeah, you're Baby Fett. You think you're Jango with your two lasers and your little mask. And Heisinger, that robot doesn't get to much set up at all. It's like, he's a robot. He fights.
He and the other one. I can't even remember the name. These stupid Star Wars names, I'm sorry. Like, they're very galaxy far, far away, but even the names that are relatively famous, I'm just like, what are they again? Oh my God.
I really only know Ventress. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, and I like that Ventress, she, like a good Jedi in a fight, you don't use your lightsaber immediately. You try to avoid using it until you're absolutely forced to. She's just mainly doing kung fu stuff to the Marauders.
That annoyed me, to be perfectly honest. The ninjas show up, and I mean, they put the sniper on the back of the caboose, which I guess makes a fair amount of sense because they figure that they're going to be coming in from a distance, but he wasn't paying attention or something. So
he was too busy hitting on Ventress.
And then, so now they're fighting with their fists, and I'm just like, come on, take out your freaking lightsaber. Just like, don't let them start to overwhelm you, but of course they do.
Well, the lightsaber, though, doesn't chop up many guys. It's unfortunate. It's just, they more like fall down.
So lightsabers are inherently a disappointing weapon because they are an energy weapon that are extremely strong, and you're thinking, well, they should be able to kill everything. This is especially a problem in video games like Star Wars The Force Unleashed, where it's more like a baseball bat than anything else.
Yeah, and it's true.
It's rare that I've been able to play a game where I've been like, yes, this is how I should feel when I'm using a lightsaber.
I mean, I think the only video game in which a lightsaber dismembers people is No More Heroes.
That's not true.
You can't dismember people in a teen-rated game, and they want all the Star Wars games to be teen-rated.
In the Jedi Knight games, they actually did a fairly good job, and you could, in fact, dismember Stormtroopers.
Wasn't that a choice in, like, options and stuff? It wasn't like, it didn't immediately happen?
It was occasional.
Yeah. And I just like, God damn, I just love the big fight scene in it. I don't have a ton of clips from it because it's just silent action, but it's not just that the action looks good and it's like, oh, a lightsaber hits a thing and then it hits something else. Like, it's camera moves. The camera sweeps around, like, the angles.
And it goes outside of the train, too. Like, you can tell, I just want to look at the storyboards for this and how they thought out every single move here.
It was very well choreographed, and I got to say that, so the original Clone Wars film was just slammed for its animation. People really did not like its animation. People were comparing it to Thunderbirds Argo. Mm-hmm. They were saying that it was really cheap-looking CG. And to be honest, one of the things that put me off Clone Wars and Rebels for a long time was the animation. I was not on board with the art style.
They even said is intentionally Thunderbirds.
I was thinking of I like when they go for stylized characters over photorealism, especially with the eyes.
Me too,
like,
for sure.
Even like every DreamWorks movie and every 3D movie outside of maybe like Pixar and Disney, it's like they will make the cartooniest characters ever, but they always have like realistic creepy eyes, and I hate that. With this, they look like they're all in an MMO or something like that. They're all like in a Blizzard game or something, which is kind of cool.
So then as the fight keeps going on, like each of the bounty hunters gets felled, though in a non-lethal way, which now I think about it, it's the Marauders are being nice. That's how you know they're the good guys, because they're like, well, we're not going to kill these bounty hunters. They don't know what they're in for. They will kill Rugoso, which I just love how he's just fucking murked. It's just like, oh, am I dead? But he's just dead. Like,
yeah, never say that. It will never really pan out.
Really asking for it. And then Fett loses to the leader of the Marauders because, as we know, Boba Fett is terrible against a guy with a sword. Like, he's just like, I got my lasers.
But
like,
he holds his own. He's pretty awesome with the dual pistols and everything.
Well, he makes a mistake trying to sneak up on a ninja, which is like, not gonna. These are lessons Boba would learn for later.
But I like that they're not just cannon fodder. They're interesting and obviously formidable villains in their own right, and that just by itself makes for an interesting. That's a problem that Star Wars has always had, is that they You have the guys who are meant to be the heroes fighting the cannon fodder, and you have the whether they're droids or they're stormtroopers. So to have a really good fight against basically ninjas who can really hold their own, that's pretty rad. And it kind of reminded me a little bit from The Last Jedi, which my absolute favorite scene, I think, in that movie is definitely the fight in which the Kylo Ren and what's her name?
Rey?
Yes, Rey. Yeah, Star Wars expert here. are fighting back to back, and they're fighting against the
new Crimson Guard, basically.
The new Crimson Guard. And that was a phenomenal fight sequence.
That was great. Yeah, I liked it.
And the reason is because it was evenly matched, and you don't get that enough in non-Jedi, Jedi against non-Jedi fights.
I love that fight scene, but then there were like 45 minutes of movie after it, and I was like, I'm ready to go. I like this.
From a pacing standpoint, I think they chose that to be like, you think we're going to end with a lightsaber fight, but lightsaber happens in the middle of the movie, and then we're going to just keep going.
That whole movie was a deconstruction, and to be honest, I really
I love that about it. Yeah. I've seen it three times now. Wow. Every time I saw it, I was like, I like this more each time. This is a really good movie. That's where I'm at, folks. If you're a Last Jedi hater, step off.
Take it on. Bring it.
So when Ventress arrives, then it's more of a ninja fight where the guy even throws a freaking smoke bomb.
Oh,
down.
Yeah, that's right. Wow.
And again, another great animation tip. The way she pulls out her two lightsabers, one to the back, one to the front, and then the way she maneuvers them around, like the as she's stepping slowly, it's really great. Just like really great character stuff.
And I have to say, based on my observation, this is not mocap. I don't believe it is, because it would seem a little too realistic to see these stylized characters actually doing human motions. It looks like traditional animation in terms of 3D animation.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
I just want to observe, she uses the dual lightsabers, which was first introduced in Attack of the Clones, and when you saw Anakin Skywalker with the dual lightsabers, you're like, oh my god, that's so cool. And then right after that, I think it was even that year, Jedi Knight 2 came out, and you could either do, or maybe it was Jedi Academy, you could do either the dual lightsabers or you could do the light staff from Phantom Menace. And I mean, I gotta say, I was a fan of the dual lightsabers.
It looks so cool in the movie. He holds them for about 30 seconds before his arm is cut off, but the lighting on it is just like blue and red and blue and red. And
lighting was phenomenal in that scene, that's for sure. Yeah.
And then we find out in the middle of the fight, the cargo is knocked over, and we find out just who's inside.
Pluma, are you okay?
Brother, you came for me.
Of course I did.
Well, 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 what do we have here?
Stay back.
That little girl is worth a lot of money to me. Now step aside.
And they end up catching them again. And Boba Fett also is just, you see again, his inexperience. Like, I thought we were saving her from this girl. And she's like, come on, you idiots. Yeah. Like, don't you see? Like, it's so great that she knows plots better than Boba Fett does. He's still very new to it. And then I just love that Boba Fett is such a novice, and that she's just like schooling him every second, even after she's defeated the brother.
That girl's crazy. We're protecting her?
Try not to be such a novice. Open your eyes. She's on their side.
It doesn't matter. Tie them down and let's finish this job.
Yeah, I was not seeing that coming, and it really makes you think about like the grand scheme of things. Like, I mean, this is a kid's cartoon, but it's like worst case scenario, like sex trafficking.
It's
and
bad.
She ends up being a child bride, which is essentially the same thing.
It's a very Shadowrun twist.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
The moral problem that you have to solve. Do you give her back to the people that you were supposed to deliver to her to, or do you find a much more interesting solution to the whole thing?
It's a nice balance of the fantastical, which is a king kidnapping a princess type thing, but when you actually break it down, you're like, this is human trafficking and sex slavery. Like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
and Boba Fett, there's no question for him. He's like, you paid me to do something and I do it. I don't care. And the Ventress, she maybe has a secret heart of gold?
None of this was my choice. I never asked to be ripped away from my home. From my family. You'll never know what it's like.
I wish I didn't, but I do.
You're just doing this for the money. It's just another job to you. You don't even care what's gonna happen to us once it's over.
Hey, rookie, I need you in the back.
That's him trying to get back at her, like, oh, you call me a novice? You're the rookie here. Get in here, rookie. It's,
I like the moment that she and the quote-unquote cargo connect in some way. Mm-hmm. It kind of breaks her tough-as-nails exterior a bit.
Yeah.
So you're the comic fan, and admittedly, I don't read a lot of comic books, but I believe that there are a fair number of stories in which it's fun to take the antagonist or a villain and make them into the hero for an issue or two.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very much kind of what happens here, right?
It's a face turn in ways. Or
Well, they're still the villain.
Yes.
But they're allowed to use the full extent of their powers. You know that they don't have to lose.
Well, in the very good Darth Vader comic books written by Kieran Gillen with art by Salvador LaRocca, they find a great way to make him the hero of the books because he is surrounded by worse people. It's him versus the Empire, and it's him conniving a way around doing the stuff he wants to do. And the Empire's like, hey, you can't just go off and do whatever you want, Darth Vader. You just lost us the Death Star. Like, you answer to me. They're really great. If you're a Star Wars fan and you've never read any of the Star Wars comics, I would say the Darth Vader book is number one where you should start.
I totally agree. Well, they set up a situation here where you are rooting for basically the villains, because I mean the bounty hunters are always the villains, and Asajj is a villain as well, and you're rooting for them in an uncomplicated way, and then it becomes complicated.
Yes.
And you're going, okay, well, what's going to happen now? This is kind of interesting.
I just wanted them to kill the fun ninjas, but now it turns out these guys.
But the ninjas were the good guys.
They were the good guys all along, just because they
love that.
And so, for the first but not the last time in Boba Fett's life, he learns you cannot bargain with a Sith practitioner.
Uh-huh.
There's only two of us left. I get half.
Half? Please. You just got to the game.
Boy, don't test me. I will be delivering the cargo and collecting the bounty. No one of true importance would lower themselves to trade with a mere boy.
Boy, you have no idea who you're talking to. I have been in charge of this whole operation.
You have no idea who you are talking to.
Yes, so some of their crew members get knocked off the train, but they're alive still, right?
Yeah, they all survive, but they're just very far away from the train. And again, with the lack of transports, there's no getting back to that train very quickly.
So conceivably, the ninjas that they knock off the train, they're not all dead.
Yes, but the guys who got like mines attached to them and exploded, they're
dead.
Yeah.
There were casualties for sure.
But that scene, I just love that scene so much because it is... Again, it's like poetry, it rhymes. But that moment was a recreation of the episode 4 scene where the guy is talking about the Death Star is so powerful, and then he starts getting choked by Vader as he's talking, like the first ever force choke.
I mean, I rewatched episode 4 a few years ago, and coming into it with semi-fresh eyes, I'd seen it before, of course, but it's just like, these Darth Vader scenes are comedy. It's about having a scary, shitty boss that you're afraid to tell things to.
Darth Vader is awesome. He's so funny. I have completely forgotten that too. When people saw Rogue One and they're like, Darth Vader's making a lot of jokes, it's like, because he's funny. He's a like a cynical dick who hates being there. He didn't sign up to do this.
He's the king of the one-liner. Yeah,
and he hates... I also now with somebody who has been in meetings and wishes he could choke people in them, that Vader is in this stupid business meeting where they're just like, yes, the Death Star is great. We built this great Death Star. He's like, shut the fuck up.
Could you imagine being in one of those meetings for like 3 hours? Oh, so you're in this on Aaron Long going...
Just all these British jerks these British jerks saying like, we built the most powerful weapon. Yes, we did. She lets Boba know what's up and that she's the only one making the delivery. She delivers it to the very gross and disgusting king. Just so you know, this is a bad guy and she should not drop
He's
off.
He's basically making slurping noises she's being sent to him.
I have a question though. I don't know if you have a clip of this or we meet this character yet, but her brother or whatever, did we hear from her yet?
Yes,
or
yeah.
Him? Okay. But I want to say that I feel like, sorry if I missed this in the clip or not, but I have to say that the reveal of one of the faceless enemies having a face and motivations and like humanity was really good. And I think they did it better in this one episode than they did in The Force Awakens, where that was my one problem with the movie. It was like, oh my God, this stormtrooper is a person. But now just keep killing them over and over again. It's fine. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
It's established that stormtroopers can be people. You feel bad for one of the stormtroopers because there's blood on him. He's like, blood, I'm freaking out. But then afterwards, he's like, well, time to escape with this guy. I'm going to just shoot all these other stormtroopers. Blam, blam, blam.
Yeah, so, and then ultimately, when, spoilers, Han Solo dies, I was like, I don't care. Like, you've killed a ton of humans that...
I care.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but I didn't give a shit.
Damn. Cold, you are cold as ice. But, yes, she gets her credits, which... I couldn't remember what credits look like because I don't think you ever see money in any of the films. Like,
I prefer space bucks.
When Solo gets when Solo gets paid at the end of episode 4, he just has a bunch of boxes that you assume are full of credits, but it's more money than he can imagine, even though he can imagine quite a lot.
I like how they look. It looks like a lot of money.
Yeah, it does. And so yes. He's finally got his girl.
My bride at last.
Poor Boba Fett getting jabbed out like that. But he's born to be humiliated. That's kind of Boba's thing.
Yeah, that really is his thing, isn't he? Mm-hmm. You're like thinking, he's the most badass bounty hunter in the galaxy, but he's repeatedly humiliated throughout all of the Star Wars media.
He's the Charlie Brown of Star Wars.
This box is just like a smaller Sarlacc pit, really. Like, it's just like, oh, this poor dweeb.
But I mean, he wasn't really a dweeb in this episode.
No, he wasn't.
Mostly held his own. It's just that he's a kid and he's still learning. And Asajj's like, kid.
Yes. No. Well, it's lucky he lived this far. Like, he was he was begging for Ventress to murder him.
She was in a bad mood. She just could decapitate him and called it a day.
All of her lines were like, I don't want to murder a child, so maybe shut the fuck up.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unfortunately for her, spoilers in universe, Ventress will not live long enough for Boba to get any kind of revenge on her. But she will at least find true love before that.
Yeah.
And the heterosexual love, the only type you're allowed to have in the Star Wars universe.
They're very close-minded.
But yes, Ventress has a heart of gold, though she still gets paid.
How do I know you won't take the credits and then hand us over?
You don't. Run along now.
Thank you.
Oh.
She had a heart of gold after all.
Yeah, well, she still got paid.
I do feel like a rube in that. You're right, Henry. This is a very stock story ways.
I wasn't looking down.
No. But I was like, going into this, I was not actually. I think I was not expecting this kind of sophistication. Also, whenever Star Wars gets into morality, I feel like it fails because it was never meant to have like gray morality. It was a very fairy tale story, but this was actually very good. And it wasn't super ambitious, but it did well for a kid's show.
Well, that's the whole point of the Clone Wars, right? It's adding texture to the universe. And the reason they were able to do that was because they were explicitly told, no, of course you can't finish up Anakin Skywalker's story. So they said, well, what do? Obviously, we introduce a whole bunch of other stuff. And so they do a really fantastic job of adding a lot of texture to say, they're clone soldiers. There's a band of them, and they are like fairly significant characters, and they are pretty interesting in their own right.
And there's a war going on. It's just chaos. There's tons of shit happening.
I feel like a lot of the affection that people might have for Anakin as a character is from this ancillary material.
Absolutely not from the movies.
Definitely not from the movies.
Yeah, because this is where they actually grow and establish the relationship between Anakin and Obi-Wan, and they try to do that a tiny bit at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, but it's just an abject failure in the movies.
They can't make up for lost time. They're too far gone.
So in so many respects, the movies are a failure, but the Clone Wars redeems it in a lot of respects, I think.
Yes, and one last clip from the episode. This is the ending where we get to see, one last look at the fun bounty hunters, and also get to see Ventress. Nothing of particular plot importance to the overarching narrative of Clone Wars really happens in this, but it's a real, you get to see a great character moment for Ventress.
You made it. I don't believe it.
Here's the payments. I already subtracted my share. Boba's is in there too. Make sure he gets it.
Aww.
Where is he?
He'll turn up.
Well, you certainly turned out to be quite the member of the team, didn't you?
I'm not part of any team.
You're too good for us now. Is that it?
No. Once I was just like you. But I'm not that person anymore. Now, I have a future.
Ends like an episode of Batman the Animated Series almost.
Yeah.
That's, that's kind of vibes.
That's a great final scene. Yeah. Or it's a great final line. Yeah. And I think that's an that's a big compliment to compare it to Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, in terms of how it ends, where it's not the happiest of endings, and the character is not like, everything's fine now. But also, I like how she trusted that horny guy to not murder a hogtied Boba Fett for fucking up. Like, he'll be fine.
Yeah,
he'll survive.
Yeah, that's one of the few lines in there where you're like, she knows he appears in later works, so he can't be dead. But
it'd be a time paradox.
It would be. But she gives him his share of the money, which was pretty awesome too. She really did. I like that you can even see inside of it. Like, yeah, you can tell she took a small amount of it, but not very much.
Yeah.
When she could have run off with all the money, what was that? What were they going to do? But she played right by the bounty hunters, and she didn't need to, which shows that she is no longer, when she first works with Dooku, at least in Clone Wars, not the Clone Wars, she is so trying hard. She's like, I'm a Sith, and I'm super killer, and I'm great. And Dooku's like, ugh, all right, yeah, it's a Sith. It's cute.
Again with the Siths.
But here, it shows how much she's grown. She's not trying to just be like, well, I'll kill everybody because I'm so tough being scary. She's really relaxing as a character.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was a great episode. Thanks to Chris for choosing this one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Perfect episode to pick, too, because, I mean, it's a great self-contained episode, has recognizable characters. It's not too tied up into what's happened before. And let's be honest, like, if you want to show somebody and be like, hey, here's an episode of maybe the Clone Wars, see what you think, this might actually be a good one, because even though it has some spoilers, it doesn't really have that much. You just know that something happened to Asajj. You don't know what happened to her. And you get a really kick-ass fight sequence that I think does a really great job of selling the animation in a way that you don't really get when you just look at, say, still screens or whatever. So I think this is a great episode to really just kind of sell somebody on, frankly, these shows that are really strong pieces of Star Wars lore.
It's true. It's true. In case you're wondering out there, folks, this is all on Netflix, at least of this recording, and there's like literally 50 hours of it on Netflix.
Yeah,
so if you want to like just hook up an IV and binge something, this is it if you've never seen it before.
Yes, and this is, you know, probably they've learned a whole lot by this episode because this isn't the fourth season, but I think even the first seasons are better than I gave them credit for. This gave me a lot of newfound respect for this. It's sad that the Star Wars Clone Wars is currently out of print, and if you want to get an official copy of it, you're going to pay a lot for a DVD, not even a Blu-ray.
So
I hope that it gets re-released again, but I bet it's in this weird universe
of Legends.
Yeah, well, it's a Legend, so they don't want to re-release it as much, and also it's too closely associated. I think production-wise, definitely Warner or Cartoon Network.
You can find it on Netflix.
So.
Yeah. The entire, it's posted in its entirety. It's like 2 hours. You can find it on YouTube.
Okay, well then, do that.
It's relatively easy to find.
So that was What a Cartoon. Thanks so much to one of our high tier backers. We appreciate your donation so much, and we're glad to be exposed to these new things. At least they're new to me, and I walked away enjoying a Star Wars, modern Star Wars thing. So you really won me over with this. So this has been What a Cartoon. Like I said before. I've been your host, Bob Mackey, and let me tell you about What a Cartoon and our Patreon. So everything we do here is brought to you by the Talking Simpsons Patreon, and as of this recording, we just celebrated a huge milestone. We just hit $10,000 today, and now we're at 10,100 something, so things are really picking up for us, and we're so excited, we're so galvanized, and we love the fans, and we love the listeners who give us money so much. If you want to be one of our most loved listeners, I recommend you go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, and for the measly price of $5 a month, you get every episode of What a Cartoon a week ahead of time and ad-free, along with every episode of Talking Simpsons a week ahead of time and ad-free. We also have exclusives on Patreon that you'll find nowhere else, like all of Talking Critic. We're currently going through Talking Futurama. It'll be almost done by the time we are launching this episode. We are only doing one season of that, but we will return to it probably at some point in the future. And lots of great stuff like interviews with Simpsons writers like Mike Scully and Bill Oakley and Dan Graney and we have so much more, Henry. I know I'm forgetting.
Wow, I have almost nothing left to say.
We have to split this plug up because there's too much. I don't want Henry to die of oxygen deprivation.
Well, also, you can find the entire first season of Talking Simpsons only there. We do our season wrap-ups of every seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5, 5, and 6, you only exclusively there. We have our deleted scenes where we go through all the deleted scenes from Simpsons seasons 5 and 6. Also, if you like this animation talk, another of our interviews was with Ian Jones Quarty, the creator of OKKO, one of Cartoon Network's best current shows on the air. As well as at the premium $10 level, you can listen and watch us go through the Simpsons shorts from the beginning. So just so we have chronologically gone through every Simpsons thing that ever existed. And there's tons more awesome, cool stuff coming down the line. And of course, if you'd like to help us out, but you can't spare the bucks right now, What a Cartoon could obviously use your help on iTunes with any new reviews and ratings you could do. If you gave us 5 stars and gave us a review, it would really help us get exposure for the free feed on iTunes. So, you know, consider that.
So, Kat, you're a special guest. What do you do? Where can we find you? And what can you plug?
I am special. I'm on Twitter at @_catbot, where I periodically... I'm currently tweeting about hockey, but I digress. Yeah. I once talked about Star Wars for an episode of Laser Time, the expanded universe, and we had a lot of fun with that one. I work for a site called US Gamer and kind of run it, and from time to time I've been known to write about Star Wars, specifically TIE Fighter, which is one of my favorite Star Wars games of all time, and even though it's Legends, though Thrawn is canon now, I still think it's a really great thing. And so I've written about that game ad nauseum, God. But also I run a podcast that's called Acts of the Blood God. It's an RPG podcast. So if you enjoy listening to me geek out about Star Wars, listen to me geek about RPGs instead.
I always love talking about Star Wars with you. And I also look forward to someday when we do Star Trek, the animated series.
Oh, yeah.
Good times.
I know.
Thanks so much for joining us, folks. Join us next week for the Venture Brothers episode Escape from the House of Mummies Part 2. We'll see you then.